Did you say the URL for the episode notes?
I did. It was earlier.
Oh, okay.
Edward's going to edit this all together, or he'll just leave it like this, and it'll be embarrassing, and people will see what fools
this
we
is,
are.
This is the sausage being made, people.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody. This is the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is Friday, March 15th. My name is Ben Orenstein. I'm here today with the CEO of Chad Pytel. How's it going?
Good.
Good. So, stuff.
This is my... I'm entering the multiple guest... Or multiple...
You have now actually been on the podcast more than anybody else.
Really?
Are you at three? Oh, actually, Joe...
No, Joe beat... Joe has me beat.
Yeah, Joe's got you beat. Well, the C-level of ThoughtBot is well represented in the podcast.
We wouldn't have it any other way. This is how we talk to the people.
To the plebs. I don't know. Are we still... Whatever. I don't know if this is content or not. Edward, you decide if this is interesting. So I went to Five Guys the other day.
Right.
And we were talking about this. And they have a crazy process. Like, the throughput they get of total burgers per hour is totally insane during the lunch rush. And I said to you, half joking, like, oh, we should totally get some Five Guys person on the podcast. And actually, we're going to try to do that.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to work on it, but you started it.
Yeah. So I tweeted at them and they responded with an email address and I sent an email and we'll see. I would love that.
Yeah.
I think there are probably actually a lot of interesting, like, business processy people that we could have on.
Yeah.
That would be appealingly.
I don't think smart. So. I was thinking about it. I'm not sure that every Five Guys has that same process, because I went to a Five Guys like in the middle, like, you know, some city I was in at a conference or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was clearly not set up the same way. It's just like a counter with one guy making some burgers behind it. And it wasn't in a place where I would expect that there would be a huge lunch rush.
Interesting.
So
I would have thought with like a franchise like that, that's like half the value.
Yeah.
Like the processes are
in place. Maybe I just didn't see it. Maybe it's, you know, maybe I misunderstood it.
Hey. You got your burger though, right?
I did, and it was delicious. I was going to say something, not that it wasn't good, but if we want them on the show, we have to be really nice.
That's like, right.
It was the best burger I ever had.
There you go.
You should really come on our podcast and talk about your process.
You really should. I'm actually interested. This is the first organization that will be like would give us a representative. And so I'm wondering if they're going to have all kinds of like marketing demands. Like, we want to know the questions. We want final sign-off. We want to hear the editing, blah, blah, blah. And we're just going to say no.
Right.
Because that's what we do.
Right.
People always want the questions.
Yeah.
But we don't give them.
We have a new page now, though, that sets expectations.
Is that out?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, nice.
It's just it's a public backpack page, but it's just so you're going to be a guest on the ThoughtBot podcast.
Yeah. Number one's like, no, you can't have the questions. I'm just going to talk to you. I kind of want some lunch now.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like,
yeah.
Like a burger, maybe. Sounds good. Sort of cow product between bread. So how are you today?
I'm good.
Yeah, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, too.
Oh, thanks. So Ruby Science just broke 1,000 readers.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
I didn't really realize until we looked it up. But yeah, it just broke 1,000, so we're at 1,003 readers. You know, that doesn't mean that we've had 1,000 purchases necessarily, because we have a company license that gives people, everyone in your company access. So... But it's actually pretty close, because the percentage of company purchases, I think, is like 5%, something like that.
Yeah, I've been doing a fair amount of pull reviewing for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some free time the last couple of weeks, and it's pretty awesome. Like, I've wanted the chance to copy Joe Ferris's brain for a while,
right?
And that's kind of what's happening.
Yeah, I sort of, you know, I don't want to. It's really good.
It's really good. Is the thing.
So, like, yeah, this episode runs the risk of being one big advertisement, but it's actually
a series
really
of small advertisements.
Yes, yeah,
with occasional useful content.
Yeah, you know, I thought Rails Anti-Patterns was pretty good. We had a lot of really positive feedback for that.
This is the book that you published a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was right when Rails 3 came out. It was when it was published, so that would have been a couple years ago with Tamer. And that was really positively received. I thought it was very good. I think this is better. It's a different kind of book. You know, the Rails Anti-Patterns was saying, here's some common things we see done wrong, and here's how you would fix it. And it was very pragmatic. This tends to be a little bit more theoretical, but is still, I think, just the right amount of pragmatism.
Yeah.
Or practicality.
Yeah. And I think the format is cool because it's sort of, it's broken down into sections, and one of them is smells. So it's like, just first, here's how you identify that there may be problems with code, and here are the implications that maybe that you should consider if you notice the smell.
Yeah.
And then there's also a solutions section, which is, okay, you've identified that this is a smell, and it's a smell you want to fix. Here's how you actually take the steps.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is there's all, there's real code behind it.
Right.
So we've been, there's basically in parallel. So Joe has been developing this application, and then he'll add a feature and sort of intentionally introduce a smell, and then talk about the smell, and then do the refactoring. And so you can watch the smell develop through the commits and also watch it get fixed and refactored away.
Yeah. And a lot of it comes from the actual work that we've done in the past. So the, you know, he's going from memory, like, we wrote this and it had these problems, and then he's redoing it.
So. Yeah. And the app is based on a real client app that we've done. So
yeah,
it's very real world. The decorators chapter is what really sort of hammered home that idea for me. Like, I finally really understood it after that journey, and it was a bit of a haul. But when I got there, I was like, ah, okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
So when we were developing the concept of Ruby Science, we went back and forth on the format quite a bit. We weren't sure whether it should be more recipe-based or, you know, how those smells and those solutions should be mixed together. And we ended up going for... It's actually quite separate.
Right.
And I think it's working well.
Agreed. So that's one of our books.
Yeah.
We're also, you were saying that you think we probably have the repo with the most people in an organization associated with it on GitHub.
I don't know that for sure, but
yeah, I think we should throw it out there and see if anybody can beat it.
Yeah, so we have 2,600 and what is it,
four
people on the Backbone Readers team.
Yeah,
and so that's probably the largest team on GitHub.
I bet there are bigger teams, but I bet they're on like the GitHub Fire or Enterprise edition.
Yeah,
you know? But if you can beat that number,
get in
let
touch.
Us know. Although it's private, so I guess we can't prove it without adding somebody. So
yeah,
if you add us to yours, we'll add you to ours, and we'll see who wins.
Well, if you buy the book, you get access to the repo, so you can buy the book, and then you'll see that the number is true.
Giant advertisements smashing into other giant advertisements. Yeah, so that's how we've been publishing our books. Is they are a GitHub repos?
Yeah,
which. We originally just started. The advantage behind this was like, well, we want to write this book maybe, but no one will buy it.
Right.
So we created a repo and started selling access to the repo and say, hey, we're writing this book. If you're interested in being part of the process, you can jump on board. But now, even though the book is done and been edited and published, we still sell access to the repo because it's nice to be able to submit issues and pull requests and things like that.
Yeah, and get changes and see changes as we work them. I don't think very many people, and this is actually something I think we could do a little bit better job on. The readers actually can see all of the branches that we're working in. So as Joe is working on something new for Ruby Science, he's doing it in a branch, and in theory, the readers can even see that progression. But we don't like tell them about it very much, so they're not seeing it unless they're watching the repo.
Yeah, you have to be fairly dedicated, I guess, or really dying for the new content.
But you know, we. When we come up with the idea for a new book, it's a big undertaking. And that was, so it wasn't like we would, once we got to the point where we actually announced it, that we would stop. But it was a great way to convince ourselves that we were on the right track by pre-selling access to it.
Totally.
We always wrote, for both Backbone and Ruby Science, we wrote the table of contents, had a good vision for what the book was going to be, and then wrote at least one chapter before we got started. So that not only so that we could launch with something, but so that we could crystallize in our own mind what it actually was going to be before publishing.
I've heard whispers of what the next book might be.
Yeah.
I don't think we should commit to it, but
right.
I think the thought right now is that so Joe's been bumping into a lot of how do I test this and testing principles that felt a little bit out of scope for this book, but I think that's probably going to be the focus of the next one.
I think so. I think, you know, we tend not to print on stuff at all, but if we don't write a testing, it's like a shame if we don't write a testing book.
Right.
I mean, we're the original authors of Shoulda. We do test-driven development 100% of the time, and Factory Girl, right. And, you know, a lot of people say they do test-driven development, but they don't really do it. Mm-hmm. And I think we could provide a lot of guidance there.
I think even people that do it, there's still just a lot of principles and things to know about and,
right.
like, tricky scenarios. Like, test code is hard to write.
Right.
It's hard to write it really well, and tests don't have tests, so right. it's even more important to get them right.
Right. And, you know, exactly what the content of the book might be, I don't know. I sort of like the idea of, like, the comprehensive testing Bible or encyclopedia.
Mm.
So, you know, maybe the framework doesn't matter. Maybe we show how to do what we're talking about in every single major framework and just have it be just this enormous thing.
These are the commitments of a guy who's probably not going to write it. It should just be like 10,000 pages. And
that would be awesome.
Right. From a revenue point of view. Depends what you're optimizing for.
It will cost $1 per page.
I interviewed Brian Helmkamp last week, and he's telling me that, I can't remember, I don't actually know if this is in the podcast or if it was us chatting afterwards, but he was saying that he has a big enterprise level competitor, and at the level of that code analysis tools, they charge you by the line of code. So it's like 6 cents per line of code. It's like, okay, see you got 600,000 lines this month, so here's your bill.
That's awesome.
So maybe we should charge for our books by the word.
I'm not sure that that's the right incentive to be placing on us or our customers.
Think of how many words we could write, though.
Yeah.
We'd be so good at that. So we've also been... It's now been... How long has it been since we launched online workshops?
We did it in the fall.
Okay. That was the first one?
Yeah. Yeah. And so now we just announced yesterday that Intermediate Rails, which was our last course not to be online, is now online, and people can register. The first session starts April 1st.
Yeah, so these are all online versions of existing courses that are actually still in-person workshops that we give, but now they are, you can take them online remotely.
Yep. And we talked about this a little bit on like the yearly recap show, but it is the same content, but we for the online version, it spread out over the course of a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that we did to really try to make the course as valuable as possible and translate it into online. So the in-person version lasts 2 days. It's very intensive. And because there's certain limitations to it being only 2 days, the main one being if you don't know Ruby or Rails at all, and you don't know web development at all, you can't take our Intro to Rails course. You need to be a fairly experienced, you know, PHP or Java, you know, some other framework developer to come in and get an Intro to Rails course in 2 days and leave it, you know, in a really great spot, actually being able to perform with Rails.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt pretty strongly that that wouldn't necessarily work. Not only do people not want to sit in front of a computer for 2 days straight listening to one of us talk, that it didn't work for people's like lives, and it probably wouldn't be as effective in teaching them.
Right. So there's an advantage in the online version where if you need to go off and learn stuff and do homework type things, you have that ability.
Right.
As opposed to if you show up in person and you don't know it, there's not really a chance. Like your days are booked solid, and unless you want to go back to like your hotel room at night and try to cram something in there.
Right.
You're kind of just where you are.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's a huge advantage, even though it's the same core content, it is a big advantage to the online version, I think.
And that was kind of like a cool surprise to me, because at first I was thinking, you know, how are we going to do these online workshops and have them be as good as the in-person?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it actually has turned into a bit of a strength. Like there can be substantial advantages to doing them that way.
Right.
So that's cool. How have the teachers been feeling about online versus in-person?
I think they like it. The biggest thing is the lack of visibility into mm-hmm. how people are doing. Mm-hmm. So, and engaging the class. So when you're doing the in-person workshop, you're up in front of the room, you're engaging the class, you know whether people are following along and getting it. Mm-hmm. And with the online version, you lack that. And so when people don't show up, so at the on every Friday we hold office hours. Mm-hmm. If one of the students doesn't show up for the office hours, we don't know whether they're not engaged in the class or whether they, you know, got like hit by a bus or whatever, you know, they're just not there and we don't know why.
Yeah.
And we really care about making these workshops as great as they can be. And so we really are worried, especially since we're just getting started with them, mm-hmm. that making sure that they are great. And so if people are disengaging from it, we want to fix that.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a challenge. So we've also recently just launched a new thing that has been kind of in the works for a little while.
Yep.
Our next giant advertisement. So we launched something called Prime.
That's right.
Which is basically subscription access to everything that we do and teach.
Yes.
So we've been selling our workshops and our ebooks and our screencasts all this time individually, piecemeal. And we have been sort of knocking this idea around for a while and then finally figured out a way to make it work. And we're charging a flat rate, $100 a month and $99 a month. Converts better. And you get access to everything.
Yep. And you work on this too.
I do.
This is something that you've been working on.
I'm asking questions in the answer format. I just like, I say a thing that's true and then add an at the end. Yeah. And you just elaborate. But yeah, when I say we, I mean we, like the you and I.
Yeah.
The non-royal we.
Right.
Yeah. It's going well so far.
It is. And I'm really excited about this possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, not only for things like Ruby Science and all that stuff, it is an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. It's continually updated and all that stuff, and a subscriber gets access to that. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you go to the Prime page, we make this part of the pitch too. Like, you know, the workshops we've been giving cost $1,000. They're actually $1,099. That's not accessible to everybody, mm-hmm. and I think that this is the way that we can take the great workshops that we're doing and make them more accessible to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People I tell this idea to say, you're giving away $1,000 workshops for $100 a month. What, aren't people just going to take the workshops and like kind of run with the money? And our response to that so far has been like, maybe.
Right.
We'll see. Like there probably will be a handful of people that would have paid $1,000 for a workshop that will do a month or two of this and then leave. And so we'll sort of have lost some money there. We're hoping that by opening up these awesome workshops to way more people at a much more affordable price, we're going to more than make up for that difference.
Yeah.
Plus, we're working hard to make sure that the only value here isn't just like workshops and then you get nothing.
Right.
So we're, you know, constantly working on Ruby Science. We've got more books in the works and then also a private blog as well, where we're publishing sort of more useful articles to people. And the goal is sort of trying to be useful all the time. Like every week, new stuff is hitting there and being interesting.
We also have a campfire chat room for all subscribers.
That's right.
So people can get onto that chat room with us, and we're in there basically definitely during Eastern time business hours, but we have someone in our Stockholm office who's in there all the time as well. And so we have a really good spread on hours. So, you know, you go in there and we save you an hour once a month, and hopefully it pays for itself.
Mm-hmm. I feel good about how we've been launching this. Mm-hmm. So we sort of rolled this out slowly. The goal was, rather than like blast it out on all our sort of channels, to do it really quietly and gently at first.
Yeah.
So it just started off as sort of like when you went to buy something on our Learn site, you would say, hey, by the way, you can do this if you want. And then after a couple of weeks of that, we're like, okay, we think it's working well and people are liking it. So we went a little more aggressive and changed the landing page on Learn. And now it sort of is the general pitch on that site.
Yeah. And it stayed that way without us publicly announcing it, but really driving conversions to it mm-hmm. for a couple of weeks before publishing. Mm-hmm. Officially launching it. And, you know, we needed to figure out what the offering was going to be. We needed to figure out how it was, like, whether it was working, and give us a chance to change it before we make a bunch of promises to people about what we were going to do, mm-hmm. and then have to change it and disappoint a lot of people.
Right.
We also wanted to understand how people behave in it. And so, you know, like, we found that people sign up, are really excited about the possibility of being able to take all the workshops. And so they sign up for all of them in the first
immediately.
Month.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the revenue that we might lose from that if they take all the workshops. It has everything to do with the fact that if you're taking 3 month-long workshops that are taking up your time and you're really supposed to be learning from them, you're not going to be learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're doing is what I've been doing during this period where we didn't have any sort of limit on that is contacting people individually and talking to them about what level they're currently at and recommending what courses and what path they take through the courses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really great because it gives us an opportunity to talk to them and show that, you know, we really want them to succeed. Here's the path which I think will lead you to the best success.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we've been talking about some sort of limiter on there, like, okay, you can take as many workshops as you like, but only, you know, one at a time.
Right.
And really, because we want to defend the quality of those workshops.
Right.
And like you said, if you just skip out on an office hours, the teacher has no idea how you're doing. And if you're supposed to go to a bunch of office hours at the same time, it's like, it's just, we don't want to compromise the quality of the classes.
Right. Right.
Because of the subscriber situation.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good, that's the, some of the office hours do overlap. And so I haven't even been making that argument to people. It's just that it's just too much work, but that's actually a really compelling argument that the office hours actually overlap.
We should talk more.
Yeah.
So we've been doing sort of a high touch thing with the first people that have been signing up for us, which I think is really cool. We've been sending them handwritten notes when they sign up, and like you've been reaching out to them via email individually.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really actually awesome aspect of doing this soft launch is that we can do that. It's not too many people.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we've discovered stuff because we are talking to people and we are seeing what they do.
Yeah.
So I'm liking this model we have for this. I think it's reusable.
Yeah, I think so too. The notes are nice when we're including some stickers along with that note, because, you know, and what I'm saying when I write the note is, you know, we're here to help you. You have to engage. You have to ask questions. And I'm hoping that getting a handwritten note from us saying like, don't hesitate to ask us questions is going to help people get the most out of this.
So we're pretty close to doing the full Big Bang launch on like the blog and the Twitter and all that.
Yeah.
We have a couple more things a couple features we want to get in there.
Right. In fact, by the time this airs, we hope to have done it. So
all right.
That's why it's a little awkward to be talking about it beforehand.
We're speaking to you from the past and hopefully in your reality, this has shipped and you've heard about it from the mountains.
Right.
Us calling about it from the mountaintops. Also, going back to the soft launch thing, the first couple of weeks when we launched, we were missing certain key features, one of which was canceling.
Right.
So it was nice to be able to get it out the door and then sort of catch up and say, okay, oh, we actually need to implement that and this, but for 0.1 to get it out, we can just punt on a bunch of these things.
Yeah.
Another nice advantage. So we've also had some changes to Apprentice.io.
That's right.
It's focusing a little more on a different audience or a subset of an audience.
Yeah, what we found with Apprentice.io is that it has one fundamental problem that would require a lot of effort to solve, which is it doesn't scale very well. So it's a one-to-one mentorship program.
Mm-hmm.
We have one apprentice and we have one developer who they work very closely with. Pairing or designer, pairing with, and the mentor guides their learning. And so last year, the first full year of Apprentice.io being an external program that we were sort of pitching as a thing in itself, we took 25 apprentices about. The apprenticeship lasts 3 months. And so we had, that's an enormous number. We went from 4 to 20 in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big number, a big increase. But it doesn't really scale beyond that for us. So we're now taking apprentices in San Francisco, and we're about to take the first apprentices in Boulder and Stockholm. But beyond that, you know, it's just a one-to-one thing. And if we want the program to be the most effective for the most amount of people, we really felt like it was time to figure out who exactly was the best person to be in Apprentice IO. So when we first started, we were taking a lot of people who were almost entirely new to programming, but right. we felt that they had a lot of potential and they had demonstrated that they actually cared and had the passion to really excel. And so the program's really effective, and it can take someone who's just getting started and in 3 months get them to, if they are really good, an intermediate Rails developer level.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of beginners. There are a lot of passionate people out there. And that's not necessarily a market that we can continually serve over and over and over again. And the people coming out of it aren't necessarily the people that we would hire, because we only hire more experienced developers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's also worth noting that there are lots of good programs out there for beginners.
Totally.
Some that they have to pay for, some that they don't. Both online things, but also in-person things like Dev Bootcamp and the Starter League and those kinds of things. And I'm not convinced that beginners can't get almost just as much of an effective boost in their learning from a more classroom-based environment than the apprenticeship model, just because they have so much to learn that even in a more classroom-based environment, which these programs are, I think they're still really effective. And that's what we're seeing. So in San Francisco, we have several of the apprentices there graduated from Dev Bootcamp. So they got started at pretty much zero, went through Dev Bootcamp, then came to Apprentice IO as an intermediate developer, or what Dev Bootcamp calls a world-class beginner.
And, that's a nice phrase.
Yeah. And then we brought them through Apprentice IO, and then we hired them. So we were able to get them from a point that really made sense for Thoughtbot and get them to the point. So that's how we focused the program now entering 2013. And we've recently made some subtle changes to the website to make it more clear who we're targeting, that we're targeting people who really are intermediate developers already. And you have to be... and have experience with Rails already.
And one of the nice things is that we're now able, so we've been building out this Learn site with a bunch of educational content, and now we have somewhere to point people that we think are a little too green that can actually get some learning done and help them bring themselves up to speed.
Right. So when we reject, we've always, when we rejected people from Apprentice IO, we always reply to everyone with a response about why and what we thought that they could do to reapply in the future. And now, as part of that, we're able to say, you know, instead, you're not quite ready for Apprentice IO yet. Here is what we think you would need to do. We now have, for $99 a month, which is really low cost compared to a lot of the other programs, you can take our workshops and you can progress to the point where you might be more eligible for Apprentice IO.
It's interesting to me that we provide that feedback of why we didn't accept people. I thought that was a bit of like a legal landmine, potentially. A lot of companies won't tell you why they won't hire you.
Right. I thought it was important for Apprentice IO that people who are applying get specific feedback. And it's fine as long as it's true from a technical perspective. So, you know, we're reviewing their code and their application, and we're saying that you're not a right fit for the program at this time. But here are the things that we think you could do that would... and it's mostly, for most people at this point, it's you need to learn Rails. You need to, you know, you need to show us code that demonstrates that you have a certain skill level with Rails, and the code that we looked at doesn't do that.
It's interesting to me as well what a how much of sort of like a farm team Apprentice IO has become. Like we've hired a lot of our apprentices.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the beginning, the vision was like, oh, we'll sort of... help other companies hire these people and maybe get some commission or something like that.
Right.
But it's become a lot more of a recruiting, like a slower recruiting tool for us.
Yeah. A really important one. And it wasn't the intention, but as we've talked about before, we made the decision to grow last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was actually really well timed, because we really wouldn't have been able to add the number of people to the team had we not had training as a fundamental part of our hiring process through Apprentice.io.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that. You and I were talking yesterday about, jokingly, but sort of kind of only half jokingly, about how we need to rent out the floor beneath us as like a recording studio kind of thing.
Right.
And it honestly feels like we're becoming more and more of a training and publishing company. Like that arm is getting larger and stronger.
Yeah. Realistically, it is, but the rest of our business is also growing.
Yeah.
So
as a proportion.
Yeah. And actually the consulting business is growing faster than the education business at this point.
Well, we'll catch them.
So yeah.
I'm going to start sabotaging client projects.
Yeah. All that has changed with Prime.
Yeah. Right. We'll see. We have this little graph or this dashboard in the office of like all the stuff that's been selling on Learn. And there's this tiny little sliver for Prime, and it's slowly growing.
Yeah.
Every time I look, it's a little bigger. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Feels good. Yeah. What else is new? What else is in the distant future?
So another change that we've made with Apprentice.io is that we're no longer explicitly taking employers onto the website and getting them to promise to pay us a placement fee.
Mm.
So, and the reason why is we just weren't serving that market well. We were hiring a significant portion of the apprentices coming out of the program, and it wasn't even the majority. So we more apprentices left Thoughtbot and went to get other jobs than we hired, but almost none of them ended up at the employers who had agreed to pay a placement fee. And that's because we didn't really care about that. What our primary motivating factor or outcome that we wanted was to get them a great job at a place that they love to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when it came time to make introductions and do those things, not only were we just talking to everyone we could possibly think might be a good fit, but they were also going out on their own and trying to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than doing something half-ass, we just don't want to do it at all.
We just had the whole asset.
Yeah. So we've removed the employers from the website, and we're setting the expectation that any apprentices that we don't hire will still help find a job, but there's no placement fees anymore. Because we just weren't getting them. And the other thing is I don't like working hard at things that I am not truly convinced of.
Yeah.
And so when employers would put up resistance to a placement fee, I just wasn't passionate about trying to convince them otherwise.
Right.
It's not what our business is.
Yeah. It's tough to sell something that you don't actually think is super great.
Right. Yeah. Because I didn't actually, what I cared about was getting them a great job.
Right.
I didn't really care about the placement fee, because especially since we had historical precedence that it wasn't significant for our business.
Yeah.
Had it started to be significant and employers really latched on to it, I might be singing a different tune.
Yeah. I take it as a good sign, though. Like, I like that we have a bit of moral scruples around that, as opposed to just like, this might make more money, let's do it.
Right.
I think there are actually a fair number of decisions we make that are not, they're like that.
Right.
Like the investment time on Fridays. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, if we build 5 days a week of consulting, we'd make more money,
right?
At least in the short term. But we believe in this model and that it's worth doing. And so even though it costs something, we do it anyway.
Yep.
I think that wraps things up, Chad. I think maybe we should get back to work.
Do you mean this isn't work?
It's work for some people.
Yeah.
This is my playtime. What episode number is this?
This is episode 41.
41. So if you would like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/podcast/41. Today's podcast would have been recorded by Anna Mariola. However, I guess you recorded it.
Right.
So it's been recorded by Chad Pidel, produced by Chad Pidel, and edited. Yeah,
see, that's lame. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, just say
today's podcast was recorded by Anna Mariola.
No. Don't do that either. Just say I'm Ben Ornstein. This was Giant Robot Smashing Another Giant Robot.
Yeah, you think we should change the sign off?
No, well, it's just that when I'm the one being listed for every single position,
you feel like a jerk.
What is it like? I don't know. I feel like Mel Brooks or something like that.
Okay. Today's podcast had involvement from a number of people. Our team consists of Anna Mariola, Editor Rawl, and Chad Pidel, and myself. Ben Ornstein, thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.